You might not have put two and two together or realize that this podcast, it's actually produced by a nonprofit, listener-supported Wyoming Public Media. We're just a little old station housed in a basement on the beautiful University of Wyoming campus. We aren't getting paid big bucks as a for-profit business. No siree, we're making this podcast not for money, but because everyone on our team believes in what we do, telling the missing stories of the real American West. But that means we rely on people like you. If you make sure to download every episode as soon as it comes out, or have been telling all your friends what a big Modern West fan you are, or would be seriously bummed if we disappeared from your feed, if all that describes you, I wonder if you'd take a quick minute to do something for me. Get into your browser and search for themodernwest.org and find the donate button. It doesn't matter how much you commit to, $5 or $100. It just matters that you show us that you want us to keep telling these stories. My recommendation? Pause this episode and do it real quick before you forget at themodernwest.org. For years, my family owned the only place of business in the town of Cowdery in the high valley of North Park in Colorado. You could see the store for miles, a big white square in the distance, and inside you walked into a beautiful old historic building heated by a wood stove. We sold sarsaparillas by the bottle, hunting and fishing licenses, my mom's famous homemade apple pie with a scoop of ice cream on the side, and my dad's hand-built bamboo fly rods. The store sat at the intersection of roads, taking you out to some of the country's only cold climate sand dunes, and one of the most beautiful wilderness areas anywhere, the Zirkles. On the wall behind the cash register, we had a map of the public lands around us. That's because pretty much 100% of our customers were outdoor recreationists. It's just a fact. Small businesses like ours across the American West rely entirely on the discretionary spending of nature lovers. Outdoor recreation is booming across the U.S. Let's face it, ever since COVID, more people are getting outside. Hunting, fishing, hiking, rock climbing, snowmobiling, whatever floats your boat, including kayaking. It all contributes about $454 billion to the nation's GDP. But is this really a reliable way to keep the economies of all these little, small mountain towns going? Sure, we know it's become the industry in more notable towns like Jackson Hole or Vail or Moab. People come from all over the world to do things like ski and mountain bike or off-road there. But what about lesser-known towns that are bordering on ghost town status? Well, it might help there too. In one little unincorporated old gold mining town in southwest Wyoming, locals are seeing more and more hikers and cyclists coming through every year. That's thanks to the growing popularity of a trail that skirts the edges of the town, the Continental Divide Trail. People thru-hike on this trail for weeks, sometimes months on end, to get from point A to point B. But then, there's also all the bike packers, a similar concept, but all your camping stuff is strapped down on your bike. Both of these are bringing more people than ever into town on this trail. And because of that, a melting pot of people from all over the world are stopping in and spending their money in an otherwise near ghost town. From Wyoming Public Media and PRX, this is The Modern West, exploring the evolving identity of the American West. I'm Melody Edwards. And here's Caitlin Tan, who just happened to wander into this town herself and has the story.
A couple summers ago, I trained for a 131-mile bike race. It was one of those life-defining summers where you prove to yourself what you're made of. And my riding partners and I were constantly looking for places to do really long training rides. We mapped one out on some gravel roads near the southern end of Wyoming's Wind River Range. But on long rides like that, it's nice to be able to stop somewhere to refill water or get some food. So we planned to go through a little place called Atlantic City. Now, I know what you're thinking. Is this the gambling mecca out east? No. This Atlantic City is nestled in between the Wind Rivers and the vast red desert in southwest Wyoming. It's truly off the beaten path on a hilly gravel road. And let me tell you, biking into town is a task. The hills are pretty steep, topping out around 8,000 feet above sea level. But finally, you get to a nice long descent into Atlantic City. Coming in, you're surrounded by sagebrush, and there's tattered wooden mine buildings that are now relics of the area's gold mining past. And once in town, you feel like you stepped way back in time. The population says about 57. Little wooden cabins dot the area, and a gravel road takes you right through town, which just has a few businesses. So on that training ride day, we refilled our water bottles and ate a much-needed burger at the local restaurant, the Mercantile. And at the time, I didn't know much about the area or its significance. But as I was sitting there in complete exhaustion, something clicked. Here I am in this restaurant slash bar that looks like an old Western saloon. On the wall are framed pictures of Butch Cassidy and the Hole in the Wall gang, and even one of actor Robert Redford in a cowboy hat sitting at that exact same bar. Old gold mining memorabilia hangs on the walls, like straight out of tales from the Wild West. And those tales were something I was totally fascinated with growing up. But the actual customers didn't match this vibe. Rather, most of the people sitting around me were in tight spandex biking shorts or hikers with giant backpacking packs. It turns out most of these people are hiking or biking some version of the Continental Divide, which passes right by Atlantic City. Now, the Continental Divide technically goes from the most northern point in Alaska down through Mexico. All the water systems to the west of the divide flow to the Pacific Ocean. Everything to the east flows to the Atlantic Ocean. And there's a 3,000-mile hiking trail known as the CDT, the Continental Divide Trail, that follows the divide from Canada to Mexico that attracts hundreds of hikers every year. Similarly, there's a biking route made up mostly of gravel roads that loosely follows the divide too. It's known as the Tour Divide, and it attracts thousands of cyclists every summer. And Atlantic City is right next to all of that action. So here's this town that's truly off the beaten path. It feels like it could easily disintegrate into a ghost town if not for this unexpected outdoor economy. All these hikers and cyclists are kind of keeping things going. And so sitting there in Atlantic City, breaking from my own bike ride, I knew there was a story there. So I put it on my reporting to-do list for the next summer. So this most recent summer, I rolled into Atlantic City, this time in a truck on a mid-August morning. The sun was out, birds chirping, people mowing lawns. I pulled up to the Miner's Grubstake, a little place to get a hearty meal and maybe a hot coffee or a cold beer. And as soon as I walk in, the first people I meet are Antoine Evra and Laureline Chelsiski. They're hikers who came from France.
We are traveling since Patagonia in Chile. And we're going to Alaska.
They've been hiking for almost a year now. They're both scientists and are actually working on a documentary about rivers and lakes along their hike.
So I have like 20 pounds of camera, gear, tripod, micro. So
the young couple looks straight out of an outdoor magazine, kissed by the sun, sporty blue microfiber shirts, towering backpacks with fly rods and extra hiking shoes strapped on.
Your shoes, they have holes.
Yeah. this is one of the major problems, I think, for the hikers. It's that they don't stand more than 600, 700 kilometers. So for the entire trail, you have to buy 5-6 pairs.
They're following the 550 miles of CDT trail that goes through the Cowboy State. This portion of the trail is described online as having deep gorges, craggy, ice-carved peaks, wide meadows, and open desert plains.
The beginning of Wyoming, it was without trees for a long... It's beautiful, but it was harder because there is not a lot of water, not a lot of shade.
They're talking about their trek through the Red Desert, which is one of the last high-elevation deserts in the country. It's a sea of sagebrush that has sand dunes, petroglyphs, iconic big game migrations, and it pretty much ends right in Atlantic City.
We really liked the Atlantic City and this part of Wyoming because it's like more, maybe more true than some modern cities in Colorado, and like we have a really different version of what is America.
Wyoming is just a little more rugged than much of America. It's the least populated state in the nation and has some of the largest big game migrations in the world. So Antoine and Lorleen made it to Atlantic City the night before. They spent about $20 at the nearby campground where they pitched their tent and did some laundry. And this morning, Antoine and Lorleen feasted.
We had like a classic breakfast and a special burrito breakfast that is really nice for the hikers.
They spent about $30 at the miner's grub stake, and now they'll carry on hiking through the Wind River Range, where they'll see very few people, which is part of why they're on this journey.
To really disconnect from the routine and to really start to just live the present and not think at all about your duties, your work, it's quite a big change and also a cultural shock.
And I agree. That's why I've gone on really long bike rides. The stress of work, personal life, none of it matters when you're out there. You just have to get from point A to point B and survive. Show yourself, you know, what you're made of. But you do have to come to towns now and then on these types of adventures, mainly to get more food. So that's what makes Atlantic City so crucial. There's not another town for about 100 miles in either direction of the trail. So Atlantic City is almost an essential stop for hikers or cyclists. Although there isn't a grocery store here, the couple of businesses offer some to-go snacks, but mostly it's hot meals from the two restaurants, like the Miner's Grub Steak. And owner Dale Anderson has come to depend on this business.
Well, it starts out the second week of June, the independent bikers that come through. And then July, mid-July or so, you start seeing the hikers come through. And they'll come through, and they're staggered throughout July and August.
Dale has a bushy salt and pepper beard. He's wearing a t-shirt with a roaring grizzly bear on it. He says the name of the Miner's Grub Steak alludes to the history of the area.
Well, there's some of the mining history. You know, they first discovered gold in 1868, I believe it was.
Cow skulls and wildlife bones look back from the walls. A map of the Continental Divide hangs in one corner. In the middle of the room is a beautiful 20-foot-long red cedar bar.
Supposedly, it was the longest red cedar bar in Wyoming.
I can just imagine gold miners sitting in here drinking a beer after a long day of hard, sweaty work. But, you know, that's long gone with the past. Now it's mostly hikers and cyclists. And Dale really likes them. He even keeps a logbook for everyone hiking or biking through.
They can kind of keep track of their friends if they're ahead of them, behind them, or, you know, who's done what.
Dale reads a cyclist's entry from November 2014. It's the one that stands out to him the most.
Cycling the divide in winter. Minus 25 degrees Celsius yesterday through the storm. Thank you for the hot water. Hopefully it won't freeze too fast. Alaska to Argentina.
In the photo attached to this entry, a biker looks like a black blob, bundled up in so many layers. He stands with his bike on an icy road with white winter fog around him.
He made it, came back the next year and said he made it.
Dale says these folks keep his business going. If it weren't for the busy summer months, it'd be hard to turn a profit, which is important to him and to the town. It helps bring in money, but also keeps that rich history of mining and the early days of Wyoming alive. It can be shared with the newcomers passing through, rather than be lost to time. Well, I knew that this mining history had to only be the tip of the iceberg in regards to the history of the area. So I went in search of the town's historians. I took a stroll up the main gravel road for a few minutes and took a left up a steep driveway to Marjane Ambler's.
So you want any coffee or anything?
I'm okay on coffee, but I would love to just chat with you.
Okay.
Yeah.
You want to come in?
Yeah, if that's okay. And what's your dog's name again?
This is Quincy.
Marjane has short gray hair with bangs. She wears blue jeans and a tan Atlantic City Historical Society shirt, a group that helped put together a lot of the local history of the area.
So did you get the walking tour brochure yet?
No.
Let me get you one of those. We'll be right back.
Okay, I'll hang out here.
So this has background on the whole town, but we are site number 3. So you can read about that.
The Dexter Mill. Which is where Marjane's house actually is. It's lined with a sandy-colored rock hillside. When you go through the wooden door entrance, you take a few steps down.
How long have you lived here?
Well, my husband built it in 77.
It's literally into the earth. That's incredible.
It's into the old Dexter Mill Foundation.
Okay, we gotta talk about that. That's
okay,
awesome.
Talk about that.
The Dexter Mill was built in 1904. Mills are used to separate gold from the rest of the rock.
Italian stonemasons built this wall, which is 3 feet thick. And so when my husband bought the property in 71, he saw this foundation and then he visualized the house and built it on top.
Marjane first came to the area in the 70s. She was working as a journalist in another nearby town and came to Atlantic City to see a local band play. Atlantic City was a little more bustling at the time, and on that night, the bar was full, music was playing, people were dancing. Her future husband was bartending.
It took me about 5 minutes to fall in love with Atlantic City.
These days, Marjane summers in town and leaves for the winter, but Atlantic City is home. She helps with the local historical society and has also noticed the uptick in outdoor recreators coming to the area.
So Atlantic City had 5 booms prior to the Continental Divide Trail, which is our 6th.
So we're in the 6th boom.
Marjane nods in agreement. The 5 booms were all energy related. Until now. For more on all this history and how things have changed, Marjane suggests we meet up with her neighbor, Susan Lehman, the former president of the Historical Society. Marjane and I walk up that main gravel road.
Susan Lehman.
Hi.
Hi.
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
Thank you for being willing to meet with me.
Yeah. We'll see what we can do for you.
Yeah.
You want to go sit in the chairs in the back?
We all sit on Susan's back porch. Even though elsewhere in town is more of a drier, sagebrush desert type climate, her area is like a green secret garden oasis. It's right by the creek, and it has history too.
We are right here in Beer Garden Gulch, where a lot of the breweries were.
Right. There was no gold in this area, so they put breweries, and this is called Beer Garden Gulch.
The miners needed beer, of course. This was the era of the gold rush. several decades full of hard work and broken dreams. After the discovery of gold in California in the mid-1800s, tens of thousands of people came out west hoping to make out rich. Now, when I hear that, I envision a prospector hiking through the mountains with a pack mule strapped down with gold panning supplies, maybe even following the Continental Divide, just like today's hikers, or me on my bike. I imagine the prospector feeling free of all his woes, just focused on finding little gold nuggets. But that romanticized version I have isn't total reality. In fact, very few got rich, and most ended up working for poor wages at company-owned gold mines. But still, little boom towns popped up all over the West, like Atlantic City and neighboring South Pass City, just a few miles up the road.
The Buckeye, which would be over those ridges over that way, would have been the first strike here.
That was 1867.
That first couple years, there wasn't a whole lot of buildings yet. A lot of the miners were in tents, but as it got cold, they could roll out their sleeping bags on saloon floors and spend the evening there until they got something built.
Over the next few years, people came in droves by railroad. The closest stop was 70 miles away. So there were two daily stagecoaches that traversed the Red Desert, the same one the French couple hiked across. The stagecoaches brought miners and families to both Atlantic City and South Pass City. The area was bustling with more than 3,000 people, and it was all hard work and a lot of sleepless nights of music and dancing at the saloon.
They were working really hard. There was a fair amount of saloons in both places, and it was mostly a male-dominated society. There were saloons, there was brothels, things of that nature.
In fact, the area was such a hot spot that people with deep pockets and politicians were rolling into the area. It even brought in Esther Hobart Morris, a leader of women's suffrage. She, her husband, and three sons also came for the promise of gold. They lived in a 24-foot by 26-foot sod-roofed log cabin in South Pass City. Now, Esther's husband had a reputation of being a lazy drunk, but she was on to bigger and better things. So by 1870, she was appointed the Justice of Peace of South Pass City, making her the first woman in that role in the entire country. At the time, that was a big deal. Apparently, people around the country looked in awe that a woman oversaw one of the richest areas.
South Pass was the county seat for a long time. We were almost the capital. You read your history. Because at the boom time, we had so many influential people that were in South Pass that they were considering making that the capital.
But with a boom always came a bust, only about 8 years later.
You know, once it bust, they didn't talk about us being the capital anymore.
More booms came, but they were never on the same magnitude. In the early 1900s, the Dexter Mill opened, where Mar Jane's house is. Then in the 30s, it was the era of the dredge, a vacuum cleaner-like device that sucks up water and gravel in a river and sifts it out for gold. And then after that, in the 40s and 50s, was the closest the town has been to a ghost town. Susan says it really was only one family keeping the town alive.
Those 20 years in there were probably as close to a ghost town as they came.
There was one point where there were like four people in town.
Yeah, during the 40s and 50s. The carpenters were always a fixture until they passed away. But other than that, there wouldn't have been a whole lot of people here.
And then in the 60s was the last energy-related boom. An iron mine opened for about 20 years. But as for the gold rush era, it was just a lot of pipe dreams.
This was the biggest gold strike in Wyoming, and Wyoming doesn't have that much gold. Okay, they would play out really fast. There wasn't that much gold ever to be found, despite what some people who are my friends will even tell you. There really wasn't. If there was a big boom here, we would still have mining active in this area, and we don't.
So the people that have stayed in Atlantic City are the diehards, like Marjane and Susan. They just have a deep, profound love for the area, and they like having their independence. There isn't even law enforcement or a medical clinic or even a mayor in town.
What we like to say is that no way could we agree on a mayor that would boss us around.
But they've often worried, what will keep the area alive? There's always that threat of becoming a ghost town. Susan used to work at one of the restaurants in town.
Some days, if two of us locals walk in, they've had a busy day. If you made $5 that day, you made a lot of money.
But a few decades ago, they started to see hikers trickling through, then cyclists. And over the years, the popularity has grown. Thousands come through every summer.
This is the first boom that is not mineral or energy. Now nothing's working. It's all tourist. Most of it is hikers and bikers.
They don't think this boom will go away like it did with the gold. They think this one is here to stay.
Right now, Wyoming we're a tourist service economy, and that's what's reflected here.
Probably the individuals who own these businesses will give out before the customer base.
And there's data to back that up, too. Trends over the last couple decades show more and more people are hiking and biking routes along the CDT. But it's not even just this trail. Outdoor recreation in general is booming in both Wyoming and across the nation. In fact, the outdoor industry contributes more to the U.S.'s economy these days than, well, mining. And for Marjane and Susan, seeing all these hikers and bikers from across the country, across the globe, is exciting.
Gives you something to talk about and somebody new to look at, you know. They're very nice.
If you are liking what you're hearing, and actually, hey, even if you don't, we would love to hear about it. Take a moment right now to leave a rating or review on your podcast app. It'll help new listeners discover the Modern West so that we can keep bringing you stories about the evolving identity of the American West. Hey, thanks, y'all.
One business that's also really benefited is the local RV park. Like everything in this town, it's just a couple minute walk down that gravel road. I walk up to Lucy Milham, sitting on the front porch of her A-frame cabin. She's wearing bright, shimmery eyeshadow and is smoking a cigarette. To her left is a wooden sign engraved with a gun and the words, "We don't dial 911," a nod to the lack of a police department here.
We had a wolf this spring, mountain lions. Last year we had a bear. That night we were doing karaoke and having liver and onions. There was a bear right up there in front of our storage units.
This is just part of life for Lucy and her husband, Fred, who pulls up in an ATV. Hi, Fred. I'm Caitlin.
Caitlin.
I'm doing a story on Atlantic City and how outdoor tourism kind of helps the economy here and businesses.
Yeah. We've had a lot of hikers from other countries this year, France and Germany.
First, just for RV campers. But over the last few years, more and more hikers and cyclists are coming through who need laundromats, tent campsites, and public showers.
And there's no place out there on the trail to take a shower. So that's pretty much what they wanted. They don't even set their tents up. They go right to the shower.
And Lucy and Fred plan to expand more, adding more camping spots, some more washers and dryers. Lucy says it's a great financial cushion for their retirement.
You know, living on Social Security isn't exactly special. So we came up with the idea to put all this in to give us some extra income.
But they also live here because of the peace and solitude. Fred worries a little bit about the hand that feeds them.
You need the people for your business, but you hate seeing it too much come in, you know.
Looking around the town, it's still a long way from that. It really feels like a relic of the 1800s. But sure enough, rolling down the hill toward Lucy and Fred's place come a few cyclists. Pamela and Tim Fennell ride in on a tandem bike. It has two seats, two handlebars, two sets of pedals, all connected.
Yeah.
Yesterday we rode 78 miles.
Which is our longest day.
It's our longest day and almost 4,000 feet of elevation.
The bike and all their gear, food, and water weighs about 100 pounds. This includes their tiny Yorkie named Brooklyn. Her little head pokes out of a black basket.
I have a rain cover I made so that I could put it over her, and we may get soaking wet, but she won't get a drop of rain on her.
They came here from Indiana and are about halfway through their 3,000-mile cycle. It's been a dream for Pamela ever since she was 17, when she saw some people pedaling across the country.
We had to retire first before we had the time, because it's going to take about 4 months.
And how many times can a husband make his wife's dreams come true?
And that's why a lot of people make this journey, or even just go on a long other outdoor journey, like my own bike ride. I felt like over the summer training for that 131-mile bike ride that took me through Atlantic City, well, it changed me. It changed how I think. Not only what I think my body is capable of, but also what really matters, you know? Because at the end of the day, it's not about how many likes we get on social media or if the house is perfectly clean, but instead, what did we accomplish? Were we present with ourselves? Were we in tune with nature? These kinds of grounding things can come from really long outdoor adventures, like mine and definitely like the Fennels.
When you travel slow, you get to see more things, but the thing that has been, as far as for me anyway, is you have a renewed faith in humanity. People are kind. People want to help you.
The trio are camping in Atlantic City for the night.
This is the last stop before the basin, the Great Basin.
They're taking the divide south from Canada to Mexico. And the Great Basin they're talking about is the Red Desert.
This is your last stop for real food, real food to fill up with water, to kind of get yourself geared up, ready for 133 miles of beautifulness, but nothingness.
Yeah, you know, could be 4 days for us.
They expect to spend about $150 in Atlantic City on some laundry, showers, campsite, and most importantly, calories.
We both have bacon cheeseburgers and fries.
And fries.
But we already had an ice cream.
That's the other thing. You can't eat enough calories on this meal.
On this trip.
And that's what Atlantic City is for a lot of people. A quirky, kind of legendary stopover to get a super hearty meal after a really tiresome journey. Pretty soon, I wander over to the Mercantile, or the Merc, as locals call it.
Can we get lunch?
That's where my idea for this story started. That's where Marjane Ambler fell in love with Atlantic City and her bartender husband. Imagine you're stepping into a saloon out of an old Western. A long bar to your right, old dark wooden tables to your left. Even the waiter looks from another era, long and lanky with a blue plaid button-up, a bit of a twang. His name is Dave Griffin. He's lived here for 20 years. He doesn't say much.
What's your title here?
A little bit of everything.
Dave chuckles and looks around. It's just him, seating, waiting, bartending, and even cooking a little bit for the hikers and cyclists.
Is that a big deal for business at the Merc throughout the summer, getting cyclists and motorcycles and hikers?
Yeah.
Big part of the economy here.
Yeah. I mean, we got the bed and breakfast over there. There's a lot of cyclists, and that's what we said to everybody, because it's the only place in town.
But and even just looking around it, there's like two cyclists and a hiker right now.
They're all day long.
Gary Connett traveled here from Minnesota. Against the old battered wooden bar, you can tell he's not local, in his skin-tight spandex shorts and clompy cycling shoes.
I wanted to see the place. I've always heard about it, so I was really looking forward to just seeing this.
Gary points to the eclectic site. One hiker drinks a beer at the bar. Her backpack is almost as big as her. There's a couple of cyclists, also all in spandex, eating juicy burgers. All in a restaurant that was originally built for gold miners.
Yeah, it's really an historic place and has a lot of character. And all the bikers stop here. They don't bike by it. They stop here and take in its ambiance and its flavor and get something to drink and eat.
So all these travelers, the French couple, the tandem bikers, Gary from Minnesota, heck, even myself, we're all just a few of the thousands that come through Atlantic City every summer. Most of us on foot or bike. We might go in there not knowing about the town, just looking for water or sustenance, but leaving is different. You come away a little bit different of a person. Sure, you're more hydrated, maybe have a full belly, ready to tackle the large hills getting out of town, back onto the trail. But you also leave with some history. The people of Atlantic City are really proud of its history and have worked hard to preserve it. In books, on roadway signs, in memorabilia, on the walls at the Merck. But it's important there's someone to pass that knowledge and history on to. So maybe these big hikes and bike rides are more than just about finding yourself. Maybe they're also about discovering these off-the-beaten-path kind of places and breathing a little life into them, learning about their history, and in turn, becoming a little piece of their history. Gary spends about $10 on some Lay's potato chips and chocolate milk. It'll help him get through the next few miles of biking. He can't stay because he's on a strict schedule, but he says he'll definitely be back.
Thank you for talking with me,
yes.
And enjoy your snack.
I will. Thank you so much.
I really appreciate it.
That was Caitlin Tan. To see photos of Caitlin's visit to Atlantic City, visit us at our website, themodernwest.org. Next time on the show, I'll bring you home with me to North Park in Colorado, where wolves migrated in a few years back. The rhetoric we've heard about their arrival has been very us versus them, but actually, North Parkers have complicated feelings about their wolves.
I would love to have them be part of this ecosystem. It's made for it. There aren't that many people, and I think it can improve the health and size of our other herds.
I'm Melody Edwards. Our assistant producer, McKenna Lipson, was the sound designer for this episode. Our digital producer is Ryan Kelly. Our theme song is by Screen Door Porch. We always love hearing from our listeners. Reach out to us at themodernwestpod@gmail.com. We're also on social media at Modern West Pod. If you love this show and care about this kind of storytelling, share it with a friend or leave us a review. The Modern West is a production of PRX and Wyoming Public Media. One of our goals is to get a dialogue flowing about the stories that we're telling. We're hoping that you'll join the conversation. So connect with us on social media and let us know what your thoughts are, whether you agree with what you're hearing or not. We're at Modern West Pod on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. That's Modern West Pod.